Madhav ki, Shri Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna. Please repeat it. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5. Chapter 11, Text 6. This is entitled, Jad Bharat Instructs King Rahugana. Dukkham sukham vyati riktam chativram. Kalo papannam phala avyanakti. Alinga Maya Rachitantaratma Svadehinam Sanskriti Chakrakuta Dukkham Sukham Vyati Riktam Chativram Kalo Papannam Phala Avyanakti. Alingya Maya Rachitantaratma Svadehinam Sanskriti Chakrakuta Dukkham Sukham Vyatiriktam Chativram Kalo Papannam Phala Avyanakti. Alingya Maya Rachitantaratma Svadehinam Sanskriti Chakrakuta. Sukham suktirichativram Kalo papannam phalam avyanakti Lingya maya rachitantaratma Sadehina sanskriti chakrakuta. Matajis. Dukkham sukham vyatiriktam chativram Kalo papannam phalam avyanakti Alinga maya rachitantaratma Svadehinam sanskriti chakrakuta. Dukkham. Unhappiness due to impious activities. Sukham. Happiness due to pious activities. Vyatiriktam. Illusion. Cha. Also. Tivram. Very severe. Kala upapannam. Obtained in the course of time. Phalam, the resultant action. Avyanakti creates. Alingya, embracing. Maya rachita, created by material nature. Anta atma, the mind. Sadehinam, the living being himself. Sangjiti, of the actions and reactions of material existence. Chakrakuta, which deceives the living entity into the wheel. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The materialistic mind, covering the living entity's soul, carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Please repeat. The materialistic mind, covering the living entity's soul, carries it to different species of life. This is called continued material existence. Due to the mind, the living entity suffers or enjoys material distress and happiness. Being thus illusioned, the mind further creates pious and impious activities and their karma, and thus the soul becomes conditioned. Purport. Mental activities under the influence of material nature cause happiness and distress within the material world. Being covered by illusion, the living entity eternally continues conditioned life under different designations. Such living entities are known as nityabaddha, eternally conditioned. On the whole, the mind is the cause of conditioned life. Therefore, the entire yogic process is meant to control the mind and the senses. If the mind is controlled, the senses are automatically controlled, and therefore the soul is saved from the reactions of pious and impious activity. If the mind is engaged at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayor, the senses are automatically engaged in the Lord's service. When the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. As soon as one thinks of Krishna, he becomes a yogi, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Yogi Namapi Sarvesham Madgatena Antaratmana. This Antaratmana, the mind, is conditioned by material nature. As stated here, Maya Rachitantara Atma Svadehinam Sangsriti Chakrakuta. The mind, being most powerful, covers the living entity and puts him in the waves of material existence. Om Jnanam Timurandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Bilitam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapatantika. So, I guess, first of all, I'd like to request the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas present here. So, I can try to say something on this verse. This is a continuation of Jad Bharat's instructions to Maharaj Jahugna. And in this section, he talks a lot about the mind and the way this mind works. So in the Gita, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also speaks about the mind and how this mind becomes entangled. And there he says, Dhyayato Vishyapunsa Sangaste Shupajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kamat Krodot Vijayate. That he says, by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment to them. From attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger rises. And from anger, one falls down into this material world. So, one of the characteristics of the mind, one of the major functions of the mind, is to contemplate, right? To focus on material things, to contemplate the objects of the senses, to and then gradually develop attachment to them. What are some other functions of the mind? What else does the mind do? Accept and reject. Yes, this is sankalpa and vikalpa, right? Sankalpa can mean reflecting on something, and then when you're reflecting on it, then to analyze it very carefully. Right? So then we tend to analyze the positive features of that object and the negative features of that object, and then to further then expand on it. So it's been described as reflective, analytic, explicative, right? Sankalpa. This is one function of the mind. Another function is vikalpa, which is doubting. So then once we focus our mind on something and we analyze it very, very carefully, and then we tend to like it, then after that, after sometimes, then we start having doubts about it. Well, is it the best thing or not? Was this the right decision or not? Because there's that tendency to then want something else or to feel dissatisfied with what we have. So that's vikalpa. And then there's a third function of the mind that is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam on many occasions. It describes it on many, many occasions. This function is called producing desire or kama sambhava. That the mind actually produces the desires for the living entity. So we often think that whatever we come across in this world, so whatever ideas we have, whatever desires we have, they are in fact our desires. But Krishna in the Gita and also in the Bhagavatam is saying that the mind is separate from the soul, right? The mind is separate from the body and from the soul, from the person. And so therefore, this mind is not us. And it is the mind that is producing the desires. And when the mind produces the desires, then we call it our own desires. Right? It says kama sambhava. It's producing desire is one of the activities of the mind. So one may then wonder, one may question that here Jad Bharat is speaking about this mind and how this mind causes us suffering or enjoyment. One may wonder, well, where is the role of the soul in all of this? If the mind is producing our desires and we're trying to follow our own desires, then nothing is really ours. The idea or the desire was not ours. And how is the soul involved in all the different activities? How am I to blame or to be given credit for a good desire or a bad desire that I have? So, the mind is also described as guna pravaha, meaning that the mind is always being sort of tormented or is a combination of various gunas. So sometimes the mind is in goodness, sometimes the mind is in goodness and passion, sometimes the mind is in ignorance, sometimes the mind is in passion and ignorance. So there's all these various, according to the environment that we're in, according to the environment we wish to be in, the mind contains or gets certain gunas. And those gunas stick onto the mind or form the mind, so to say. And then according to those gunas, the mind produces certain desires. Right? So if I'm very much in the mode of ignorance, then my desires will be produced from ignorance. If I'm in the mode of passion or goodness, then similarly the minds will produce certain desires. So the soul cannot produce any desires, right? Because everything is ultimately coming from Krishna. Even all of our desires, there's like certain, you know, like clouds in the sky, and we choose one. We just hold on to this desire, this desire, this desire. But really, these desires, they don't belong to us. Right? For example, I may have the desire to, let's say, in England, they do this, have this sport called punting. Right? You get on this boat, and it's in shallow water, and you have these long poles, and people go punting. So it's a particular sport that is, or a form of recreation that is particular to England. Now, this desire really was not my desire, because before I came to England and before I knew about this particular type of recreation, I didn't have this desire. Right? Otherwise, I would have the desire of going on a raft down the river. That's what they do in the city that I was raised in. Right? So that desire was different. But once I saw that, then that desire manifested in my mind, and then it becomes stronger and stronger, and then I really want to do this. But if I had not seen that, then that desire would not have been there. So this is all, in every situation, Krishna creates some millions of desires that there are. At every street corner, there's millions of desires that we can choose from. And then the soul chooses a particular desire, right? Chooses that I want to fulfill this desire, that desire, right? So really, the choice that the soul has is which atmosphere does it want to be in, right? Which association does it want to be in? What modes of nature does the soul want to cultivate? That's where the choice of the soul is. And therefore, again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is one theme that we find. If there's one message in the Bhagavatam that comes out that is maybe the most prominent among all the messages, is that it encourages the devotee or the reader to find good association, right? To take the association of the saintly devotees, to surrender to the devotees, to hear from the devotees and the Lord. Because the desires are created based on the association, and the only thing that the soul can do really is to choose the right association. And then once we're in that association, we were in some ways almost driven to do those things. It's almost impossible not to do those things, right? It's in some ways beyond our control. And I mean, we may have experienced this many times in our life. I've experienced this many times that philosophically, everything we may know that this is not what I want, right? This is not what I desire. But if we're in a particular association, we are, like Arjuna says, even though we don't desire it, we're forced to act in a certain way. So, again and again we see that the only way to control, or you could say in some ways, tailor this mind, is to put it in the right association, right? To put it in the right atmosphere, so it desires the right thing. So that it produces these right desires, and the soul has the strength, or you could say, can choose these desires. So, in some ways, you could say in the Bhagavatam, choice is different than desires. We choose our desires, right? We choose which desire we want to. We always have many desires that come in our mind, but it's the soul that chooses a particular desire and says, this one, this is the one we will do. So, this is here being emphasized in this particular verse, that all of our happiness and all of our distress, all of our suffering or enjoyment is being produced by this mind, by nothing else except for this. And therefore, the soul's only challenge really is to find this association so that the mind can remain focused, can remain in that correct place. So, and otherwise, we have, this wonderful verse by Prahlad Maharaj, where he talks about this to his father. He tells him that there is, for those whose, I forget the exact translation, but he says, but those whose minds are fixed in material life, nothing can work, right? He says, the good instructions of others cannot work, austerities cannot work, to bring that mind under control, penance cannot work. The only thing that can work is if they take the dust of the devotee and put it upon their heads. So this is because it's about association. Ultimately, the mind, and the mercy of the devotee as well, ultimately this mind carries what it associates with. Ultimately, Lord Chaitanya also, when he's asked, right, he's asked, what is the characteristic of a devotee? Then he says, a characteristic of a devotee is asat sanga tyaga ye vaishnavachar, that a devotee is someone who gives up bad association, and who gives up undesirable association. And that he describes as primary, or maybe the first quality, the most important quality of the devotee. Even it's very interesting that he, even more so, even before accepting good association, even before saying that, he defines a devotee in terms of he gives up this bad association. Because we're attached to this association, right? Even though it seems like it's not, we think of association generally only in terms of people, that we're at, we, you know, when we become a devotee, we give up our material sort of friendships and our old, material relationships, this and that. But we're attached to the modes, to the association of the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, right? Just like we may be with devotees, right? We may be in the devotee association, but still we have the desires from, or the attachment to the atmosphere of when we were going to high school or to school or something like this, and that those modes are still attractive to us. So we keep on going back to them, and to give them up is actually very difficult. To give up that association, to give up this lower modes, and to fully accept the association of devotees. To give up reading mundane books, mundane movies, mundane, all these things, it's not easy, right? And that keeps on coming back, and so the mind keeps on going into it. But a devotee is someone who's able to give all that up and only take full shelter of the devotee of the Lord. And this only, the Bhagavatam describes it, this only is the way to success in spiritual life, because there's so many, like Srila Prabhupada said, this path is like a razor's edge. So there's so many ways we can fall and we can slip, that unless we're under the guidance of a devotee, this mind cannot remain fixed on Krishna. Right? There'll be some trick of Maya or some pitfall that we'll fall into, and we won't realize. We'll mistake that for spiritual life, and we won't make it to the goal. So all the stories in the Bhagavatam, just about every single one of them, we see that they're giving this message over and over again. Like the story of Nada the Muni, the story of Dhruva Maharaj, the story of Prahlad Maharaj, that they all attain. Jai. They all attain this perfect destination by the association of devotees. Right? They are all able to attain the Lord by because they serve the devotees, because they receive this advanced association. And as a result, they're able to attain the Lord. So then here, then it said, okay, once we fix this mind, then it's described here that the that suffering or enjoyment is in fact only due to this mind. So it's not due to karma, right? So this also is our the Srimad Bhagavatam many times. This is it describes the important role of this mind, that ultimately our previous sinful reactions are related with the body, right? So the physical body performed certain bad activities, and as a result enjoys or suffers the results of his activities. So karma is related to this body and to this mind, right? So if the devotee doesn't identify with this mind, then karma no longer exists for that devotee. So the source of our suffering, ultimately, the ultimate source, is not karma, right? Many times we feel that it is due to our past karma that we are suffering or enjoying. But it's saying that ultimately it's due to the mind, because it says regardless of how bad karma we have in our previous lives, right? We may feel that we sinned so much and therefore I'm suffering. No matter how sinful we were, and no matter how many heaps of bad karmic activities we have, that karma is to be enjoyed or suffered not by the soul but by the mind. So if the person does not identify with the mind, right, then karma no longer exists for that person. So ultimately, therefore, we say, therefore, suffering a devotee can transcend suffering or suffering is not the fault of the Lord, because we always have this choice not to identify with the mind. Right? We cannot change our karma. Our karma is there. We cannot change our way of acting, all these things. But if the soul engages his mind in the service of Krishna, if he absorbs his mind in Krishna's service and forgets this material mind, right, forgets, doesn't identify with this mind anymore, then all of this karmic reaction, good and bad activities, pious and impious activities vanish. Right? And there's no suffering for the devotee. So although the karma may remain, there is no karma because the devotee is completely fixed in Krishna's service. So in the Bhagavatam, Krishna describes what's the nature of the mind in these different modes of nature. Right. So regardless of our karma, regardless of our past activities, what is the mind when it's in different modes of nature and how the soul can raise it to the highest mode of nature. It says when the mind is in the mode of goodness, right, then the mind settles, the senses are satisfied, and in the body there is no fear. Right? So there, it's a state of freedom from no fear. I think at one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, what was it like to be a pure devotee, or what was it like being a advanced devotee, and he said he has no fear. Right? He said, "I have no fear." He said, "So there's no fear of disease or death or bad sinful reactions that may come, and there's no attachment. The mind is not attached to that state. So that state is when the mind is fixed in the mode of goodness. Then the second stage is in the mode of passion." Right? When the mind is in the mode of passion, then there's longing. It's filled with so many thoughts and desires. And the mind wanders along with the senses. So these are, and there's no rest for such a person. It says there's no peace or no rest for a person who has his mind in the mode of passion, rajoguna. And then in the mode of ignorance, tamoguna, is the mind is it sinks down. It disappears and it's no longer able to hold thoughts in its mind. It says, mano nashtam, the mind is ruined, right, by the mode of ignorance. Mental darkness and depression. This is the mind in the mode of ignorance. So we find that our mind goes through all these different stages, right? Depression or unhappiness. This is, in fact, the mind in the mode of ignorance. And satisfaction, happiness is the mind in the mode of goodness. So in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where this is being described, Krishna describes that to Uddhava, how for one who's controlled his mind, for one who's fixed his mind on Krishna, he says, what more is there to attain? Right? What more is there to know? For such a person, there's no purpose for penance or charity or austerities. That person has already attained the result of all of these things. Because it says, all of these things, all of these activities of austerity, reading of scripture, penance, are all meant ultimately to fix this mind on Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj tells his father, Hiranyakashipu, he says, the highest way of worshipping the Lord, he says, is equanimity of mind, where he says to not see any difference between friends and enemies. Right? So, again and again in the Bhagavatam, this theme is being described there. That one who is able to control this mind, and ultimately to fix this mind on Krishna, that person doesn't need to do anything else, because that person has in fact attained the results of all other types of spiritual activities. All meaning that all other spiritual activities are meant to bring this mind to Krishna. And therefore I was thinking that this is why Rupa Goswami said that our ultimate principle is to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. And he says all rules and regulations are sort of servants of this particular principle. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam, again and again, it's saying this thing, that our problem, the human problem, is the mind, and if we can fix this on Krishna, then we've gained the results of all other actions. And this mind, it said that it's created from the mode of goodness, as opposed to, let's say, the intelligence, which is the mode of passion and the other senses. So the mind is in the mode of goodness, and therefore the mind can hold the image of the Lord. Right? Krishna is Shuddha Sattva. It's described that he's pure goodness. So, meaning that through our intelligence we cannot come to know Krishna. Right? Through our reasoning process, the buddhi or the intelligence cannot completely or fully lead us to Krishna, because it's incapable. It's in this mode of passion. But by engaging our senses, by engaging this mind on meditation on the Lord, we can access the Lord. This is why bhakti is described as higher than jnana or knowledge. Because the mind in the Bhagavatam is said it's in the mode of goodness. So this mind is the vehicle or the instrument through which we can approach Krishna. Like in other Sankhya texts, like in other places, in other scriptures, they often describe that the mind is in the mode of passion. Right? But the Bhagavatam puts it in the mode of goodness. It says, no, it's mode of goodness because our process of devotion focuses on this mind, how to engage the mind in Krishna's service. And it's this mind that is the most powerful means, even though ultimately we give up this material mind, but it's the most powerful means of attaining to the Lord, because it's created from this mode of goodness. So, I guess, there's one last point that Srila Prabhupada is making in this verse, which is many other points, but one other point here that he's making, where he's saying that it's described that the living entities are known as nitya-baddha, or they've been eternally conditioned by this mind. So, also in the same section in the 11th canto, Uddhava asks this from Krishna. He says that the soul is described as nitya-baddha and also nitya-mukta. He says eternally bound and eternally liberated. Right? He says it's described as both of these things at the same time. So how are we to understand this? And the response that Krishna gives is also relating with the mind. He says that in fact, he says that bondage is not factual. He says nitya-baddha means eternally bound. So he says bondage is not factual. Why? Because bondage is simply imagined, right? It's like the state of a dream, where we imagine ourselves to be in that condition. Bondage is produced of the mind. There's no actual factual bondage for this mind. And liberation is actually eternal. Right? Liberation is actually factual, and it is actually eternal. So he describes that that the living entity is bound eternally, of course, in the sense of for a very long time. He's bound for an immense period of time, but only in thought, only in consciousness. There's no factual binding there. The soul is actually not bound. It imagines that it is bound, but it's in fact liberated. In other words, in reality or in truth, the living entity is liberated from this from bondage. So, yes. If there's any other comments or questions on this verse, then I'll. So, is that a comment or a question? I should both hear. Well, I also was, because for example, in the analogy in the Srimad Bhagavatam of the story of Puranjana, then it describes it how the soul first meets the intelligence, which is this woman who comes and meets Puranjana in the as a form of the buddhi. I guess many times if the Bhagavatam focuses on the buddhi as the cause of bondage, and many times on the mind. And in other places it says that this manas or mind refers to the chitta. It refers to both the mind and the intelligence. So this was clarifying what you're saying, because at different times the Bhagavatam is focusing on, sometimes it's focusing on the buddhi, sometimes on the mind. Yes. Yes, thank you for that point. Yes. The intelligence has Krishna also, like you were saying, Krishna also says that we cut bondage by the sharp weapon of knowledge. So the intelligence, I guess it's first, like you're saying, first the intelligence has to be fixed, and then the mind and the senses follow the intelligence. And that pure knowledge is not different than devotion, right? Yes, I guess, yes. Devotion. So one of the examples that Srila Prabhupada gives here is like the example of Maharaja Ambarisha, where he was engaging all of his senses in Krishna service. His hands in cleansing the temple, his head in offering obeisances to the deities. He says, when the mind and senses are engaged in devotional service, the living entity naturally becomes Krishna conscious. So in the case, let's say, of Maharaja Ambarisha, where is the role of his intelligence? Senses, yeah. Yes. Yes. But what gives him freedom is his mind. Are the senses engaged in Krishna service? It seems like Srila Prabhupada is making that point that it's his engagement of the mind that actually gives him freedom from material existence. Then. Yes. Any other comments or questions on this point or other points?
Mm.
Yes. So I think your question is so what do we do? Because we face all these different desires, and then sort of how do we get through life by avoiding these desires or overcoming these desires and moving forward in spiritual life. So like Maharaj was saying, well, one thing is the intelligence. That through the intelligence, we understand that these desires are not what we want. Right? This is not what will bring us happiness. This is not what will bring us pleasure. So the intelligence helps us overcome these desires and avoid these desires. And another thing, what we're discussing, this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, that it was saying how the mind contemplates on the objects of the senses, then develops attachment to them, and then from attachment lust develops, and from lust one falls down. So another thing is the practice of the mind, which is just to stop thinking about it, right? Stop thinking about these desires. We need to stop contemplating these desires and fixing our mind on Krishna, on fixing it on fulfilling spiritual desires, you could say in some ways, or serving Krishna. The mind will always want to keep on going back to these same things, the new things that we see, and the new desires that come to us in different situations. But Krishna says in the Gita, through practice and through detachment, one can overcome them. So part of the practice is to understand through intelligence that we don't want these, and also to train the mind to stop thinking about these things. Ultimately, it's just we have to absorb our mind in something else. We have to absorb it in Krishna, and only then will those other desires go away. It's just like we may have so many desires, right? We may have, I want to do this or do that, and then we start reading an interesting book, let's say. So at that time, we forget those desires. Those desires go away. They vanish. And we may develop new desires based on what we are reading or what we are seeing. So in the same way, if we or exactly like that, if we absorb ourselves in reading about Krishna, hearing about Krishna, then those desires we will forget and will develop desires that are spiritual. So yes, ultimately we cannot avoid the material world. The material world is all around us, but we have to absorb our mind in Krishna. That's the idea here. Yes. And just one point about these gunas. I was also thinking that these gunas, we describe them as qualities. Right? We sometimes wonder, we say, everything, the Bhagavatam says that everything in this world is composed of the gunas. Right? So this desk, it's composed of the gunas. So it's not just that the gunas colored it, but everything is actually composed of the gunas. The gunas are the three fundamental things from which everything else comes. So these gunas are qualities, right? So every mode of nature has certain qualities. And it's very interesting that ultimately we know things only by their qualities, right? Ultimately, if I ask you, what is this desk? Right? Then you say, well, it's something brown, it's something hard, it's something, that's 2 feet high. So the way we know it is we don't know what it is, actually. We don't know what really wood is. But we know it by its qualities, right? Everything is ultimately built of qualities. Hardness, softness, light, darkness. So when the Srimad Bhagavatam says that everything is made of the gunas, it's actually a very logical statement. It's actually, Western philosophy would agree with that. That ultimately, all we know of the world is qualities. Everything is built or known only through a quality. Just like I may say, this table is made of wood. And we say, what is wood made of? Wood is made of atoms. He says, what is atoms made of? Atoms is made of electrons. And then what is an electron? And then you say, well, then only you can describe it using its qualities. You say, an electron is something that has negative charge, right? It's negative. It's something that moves very fast. It's something that's very light. And it's something that's very small. So ultimately, we don't know what an electron is, we just know it has these qualities, right? Because that is what it is. It's a bundle of qualities. So similarly, everything in this world is composed of various qualities. So the living entity tries to put himself where in an association where there's the qualities of sattva-guna. There's so certain places like bars and nightclubs, these places have certain qualities, the qualities of ignorance, whereas other places have the qualities of goodness. Similarly, our mind is also has particular qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So, based on the environment that we put it in. So, the various gunas, the devotee tries to put himself in the association in a good atmosphere, right? Where the qualities are uplifting. Yes, Maharaj, you're going to say something. Yes, the gunas oftentimes are described as Krishna's energies, his three material energies. like sattva guna is jnana shakti, it's his energy of illumination, of giving knowledge. Passion is kriya shakti, or the power of activity, and ignorance as dravya shakti. So yes, it is the power of the Lord, and these powers. The Bhagavatam, it in some places described how all substance, time, place, all the elements, these are all simply a combination of these powers of Krishna, which are the gunas, and then those also are Krishna's powers. So the bhumirapunalo vayu, these five elements are Krishna's energies, which are manifest from his energy of the gunas. So one way, I guess, also to see is that the gunas are also these energies, these three energies are forming all the various varieties of the world. I don't know if this is a correct way to understand it. That the gunas are also, because the Bhagavatam describes the gunas as energies, that they are the powers of the Lord, and how these are producing all substances. Yes, so these energies, like you're saying, these energies are coloring. They're coloring all the various manifestations of this world. So. Yes, it's just that in some places in the Bhagavad it says that all substances are also produced from the gunas. Like matter is primarily the mode of ignorance. It's dravya shakti. So I guess they are also colored by the gunas as well. Maybe this is what the Bhagavatam is meaning. Yes. Any other points or comments on this? Okay. Well, there's different qualities that are described in the gunas, and so it says like sattva guna is illuminating. So sattva guna essentially means that it illuminates things to the self, so that the soul can understand certain things, or whatever the mind or the body. Therefore, mind is put into in the mode of goodness is because the mind, through the mind, we can understand various things. The mind sort of illuminates things. Whereas the mode of passion is described as activity. So that's why we call it passion. It's called kriya shakti, where energy, power, strength. They like to do physical things, right? Sports and things. Their body is just made for it because there's an increase of mode of passion there, which causes activity and various things. And then ignorance is described as stability, darkness, lack of movement, like that. So I'm not sure about roundness or sharpness, these things, but there's certain characteristics of each one of these gunas that are given. So, for example, one example that we could use is like if a person is out at night, right? So that will bring about certain gunas in that, it's the same mind that may be there in the afternoon or in the morning or in the evening. But in the evening time, a person will be more disturbed because there's a increase of the mode of ignorance at that time, which is darkness, and so many other qualities Krishna gives in the Gita, sleep, laziness, all these different qualities of the mode of ignorance. Go ahead. Yes. Yes. Yeah, well, Krishna's maya is often described as gunamayi, or composed of the gunas, Right? So, but like Maharaj is saying, it can be composed of many other, you know, Krishna has so many energies. He has unlimited energies. So, so the gunas play a very important role. That's the idea, basically. So Krishna's Maya is creating, is this, from Maya comes Prakriti, and Prakriti is creating all these worlds. Prakriti also is described as that which is composed of the three gunas. So, and this is why our different scriptures, like the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, they talk about the gunas again and again. Because these are fundamental, these are, essentially, the soul has this choice. Vidya, our knowledge, is described as the mode of goodness. And ignorance is described as the modes of passion and ignorance. So the soul essentially has this choice to do as he wants, to choose the mode of goodness, or vidya, knowledge, or the modes of passion and ignorance, which is avidya. So, yeah. Okay, final comment. Let's. Yes, well, they say forests are in the mode of goodness, right? And Prabhupada says temples are transcendental in nirguna, and the forests are in the mode of goodness, and the cities are in the modes of passion and ignorance, right? So yes, so if it's anything natural elevates our mind. So this is, you know, incense, or it elevates the mind. It may not put it on the spiritual level, but it elevates the mind, because it's... Yes, it's been less perverted, so to say. It's in its natural form. Yes. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.